Welcome back to another episode of the Jewish Moves Podcast. This week's episode is with Ellie Klein. He's the director of development for AD. For nearly 15 years, he has worked tirelessly to promote the work of AD. Known for its special education, cutting-edge therapies, and residency programs, AD has become one of Israel's most impactful organizations for people with disabilities. Prior to that, he has an interesting journey in general at PR. Ellie, welcome to the show. How are you?
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure and privilege to be here.
Thank you so much for joining. We'll try to discuss your life and AD chronologically. You know, usually we start by asking if somebody ever thought they would be in this role growing up. I know you've written before where it's been written about you that you didn't think you'd be in this world. So I'm curious, growing up, when or at what point you realized that this type of work was in suit for you?
So it's a great question. So AD, and we'll go into it a little bit later, we care for and empower children, teenagers, and adults with severe disabilities and anyone touched by disability. And quite honestly, growing up, the disability community, disability care, inclusion, all of that was, I felt, beyond me. I was very much in the world of Kiruv. I did a lot through NCSY. I was born and raised in Baltimore, Maryland. I was doing Eastern Seaboard region. I was also very involved in a Kiruv camp called Camp Shoresh, originally in Frederick, Maryland, and now in Adamstown, Maryland. And that was my world. And when I was growing up in Baltimore, you saw there were a lot of teenagers, people my own age, who were very, very involved in things like Yachad, in working with the disability community, the special needs students and kids in our neighborhoods. And it's not that I didn't connect, it's that I didn't feel that I had it in me. I was always kind of jealous, I gotta be honest with you, with those who had the ability to do it. And later, when I went to Yeshiva University for college and I was still continuing on doing my work as an advisor in NCSY, I had a lot of friends who summer after summer were going to Camp Hask and they were doing absolutely beautiful work. And I still just, I didn't feel it. I didn't feel that I had it within me, deep in my kishkas, to be able to go and do it myself. And then something happened, a switch happened later in life when I had my very first child of my own and I held the child in my hands and counted 10 fingers and 10 toes. And there was a good heartbeat. Child was looking at me with beautiful blue eyes. And I said, you know what? Not every parent has this experience. Not every parent can immediately have the joy of a healthy child. And this is something that I should spend more time doing, figuring out how to help families that are in this space, that are working with a child with disabilities, the impact that that has on an entire family, on an entire community. This is something that I need to do more of. Pretty soon thereafter, that experience, that opportunity availed itself to me. I was working, I made Aliyah 15 and a half years ago, 2008, moved directly to the beautiful town of Beit Shemesh. And I worked every single day at Finn Partners, which is an international PR firm based in Manhattan with satellite offices around the world. And their Jerusalem office, when I made Aliyah, tapped me to be the head of their nonprofit public relations division. And they said, you know, we have several different clients that are already on the roster. But to prove yourself, you need to bring in additional clients. The very first client that I brought in was indeed AD. And there are really only two rules in the world of PR, definitely nonprofit PR. You are not supposed to overservice any one client, and you are not supposed to play favorites. And that is exactly what I did for 11 and a half years. I just absolutely fell in love with everything that AD had to offer, the work that it was doing, the way that it was doing that work with such love and innovation. And over the course of 11 and a half years working at the PR firm, I continued to grow the business and I was working with dozens of different amazing organizations. But there was just something special. Every single time I went to a client meeting with AD, I met with their development team as well as their actual practitioners, the people in the field, the special education teachers, the doctors, the nurses, the physical therapists. And everyone, they were just such wonderful people. And then I had the opportunity, because again, I was doing PR, to learn the stories, to then tell the stories. I went to the two different centers. Adi has centers in Jerusalem, Adi Jerusalem, and then in the Negev, Adi Negev Nachalat Iran. And in both cases, I was giving tours to journalists, trying to get that hard-fought traditional media coverage. And while doing so, I met a lot of amazing donors, people who were giving of themselves time and money, resources to make this thing work. And I totally fell in love to the point where I asked at the time, my client, now became my boss. I asked her if I'd be able to come over and actually be in-house a part of the Adi family. And she said, "That sounds amazing. But if you're going to be the director of development for North America, who's going to do the media relations?" So I said, "You know what? Still me. I will keep that job." So I do both, wear both of those hats, and I wear them proudly. And it gives me the opportunity to constantly be in the trenches, finding out, digging for the newest stories, which we really don't have to do so much digging because there's so many stories that are constantly showing themselves and rising to the surface. And then I have the privilege of telling those stories again in the traditional media, on our social media channels, and to every single donor, long-term donors and brand new donors, whenever they ask, "So, what's new at Adi?"
Wow, that's a great story. Presented very well. I'm curious, you mentioned the great stories, and on the website, people could find out some of it, and people who have gone in person could experience and see and hear more of it. Can you share one or two of those specific stories that really touched you?
Sure, absolutely. So that website again is adi-israel.org. I should clarify before I launch into one of my favorite stories, that Adi, the reason we chose this name, Adi means a beautiful, multifaceted jewel. And we care for the most precious members of Israeli society. We take a multifaceted approach to, again, caring for children, teenagers, and adults with severe multiple disabilities, using every resource under the sun, quite literally, to figure out how we can draw out their greatest potentials. We're talking about a population that has for generations, or had for generations, been totally sidelined, pushed into the shadows because the assumption was that there was no potential there. And we believe that every single person, every single child has potential. It's just a matter of being the right family with the right resources to draw out that greatest potential. So at our two different centers, Adi Jerusalem, right at the entrance to the city of Jerusalem, and Adi Negev Nachalat Iran, which is a 40-acre sprawling rehabilitation campus in the upper Negev, right next to the development town of Ofakim, 12 miles from the Gaza border. These two centers do truly miraculous work each and every day. And I keep talking about drawing out greatest potential. I'll give you one of those great stories that talks about just that. So the average child has really sky's the limit potential, right? When we as parents and grandparents, you look towards the next generation and you want to see some milestones met. There's obviously the developmental milestones. Then you want to see them become bar and bat mitzvah. You want to see them excel in school. Hopefully go off, fall in love with Israel over the course of a year or two, come back home and become pillars of their community, have a great spouse, have a great job. Sky's the limit potential. When we're talking about potential, when it refers to our residents and our special education students, we're talking about those who have severe multiple disabilities, so not just physical, cognitive, sensory, social, emotional, and intellectual disabilities, but all of the above, all at the same time, a cocktail of disability that for each child shows a little bit differently. And they have their own challenges while they also have their own strengths. And it's a challenge to figure out how are we going to draw out his or her own potential. And that potential might be, their greatest potential might be taking an independent step. It might be helping feed themselves one day or finding an alternative method of communication if they're said to be nonverbal. And this is their greatest potential. Again, it's not the potential that you and I have. This is what they can do in life, and it is our challenge, our mission to draw it out of them. So there's an amazing story from Adi Negev, and there's a little girl who is one of our special education students. Again, in terms of numbers, at Adi Jerusalem, we have 100 residents who live with us 24/7, 365, 130 special education students who come each and every day. At Adi Negev Nachalat Aran, we have 170 residents and 190 special education students who come every single day. Within that 190, we have Einat. And Einat was born with severe physical and sensory disabilities that made it so that the only parts of her mouth that she could move independently are her mouth and her eyes. And when I say she can move her mouth, she cannot speak, she's nonverbal, but she can chew and swallow, which is a big deal. If you feed her, she doesn't need a feeding tube, unlike many of our other residents and special education students. But if you were to feed her, she'd be able to chew and swallow. She also smiles a great deal, which is good. But the stars of the show were always her eyes. And her eyes would sparkle, and they'd move back and forth. Her eyes would move back and forth all the time to show us that she was very much in there. But what it appeared to us when she came to be assessed as a special education student and trying to figure out what her greatest potential would be, it was clear to us that she was a very bright child that was just trapped in her own body. So for her, we realized that greatest potential would be figuring out how to use her eyes to help her speak. So for many of our residents, we use a system that's called AAC, Augmentative and Alternative Communication. And essentially what that means is using emojis to teach them how to communicate. If they're nonverbal and they're never going to actually speak a word from their mouths, then teaching them words, building their vocabulary like we do for a neurotypical child, is not going to help them do much of anything. But if we teach them how to use specific symbols to represent what they're thinking about, how they're feeling, what they need, we can really help them interact with the world. Very often we'll have these special emojis, these AAC symbols on the trays of wheelchairs. We'll have decks of cards that special educators and physical therapists and occupational therapists will carry around with them to help the students, the special education students and the residents communicate with them. And very often we'll even have iPads, specialized iPads that they can work through on their own. But what if you're a child like Einat that doesn't have the dexterity, doesn't have the ability to move their own arms to point at these cards? We have to use their eyes. So we have a special system with these specialized iPads. It has a retinal camera that is set up with the specific child's eyes. We are able to essentially link it to the way that their eyes move. Every single day, they sit in the classroom, they link up their eyes, and their eyes are able to become the mice on the screen, the same way that you would move a mouse with your hand while you're working on your laptop or your computer. They have the ability to use their eyes as the mouse on the screen to choose the items that they want. So it starts with simplicity, simple things like yes and no, hot and cold. What activity do you want to do to choose between them? And that's where we started with Einat when she came to Adi. And day after day, she was working at it. She was trying with the special educator, and it looked like she wasn't making much progress. And the parents were worried. When is Einat going to make that leap? And the special educator said, don't worry. One day it'll happen. It's just a matter of, you know, every single day, keeping at it, doing our hishtadlus, making sure that she will find her way through it after she really understands the system. And you'll see, one day there'll be a breakthrough. And one day it happened. Every day, because she's a special education student, mom brings her into the classroom. This morning was no different than any other morning. Wheeled her into the classroom. She got a big hello from the special education teacher. Boker tov, Einat, good morning, how are you? Wheeled her into the classroom and looked down at Einat and saw what appeared to her to be an entirely different child. Einat was glowing. Her eyes were sparkling. Well, there hadn't been progress until today, but with this kind of look, maybe today's a different kind of day. Wheeled her into the classroom, put her in front of her computer, waved goodbye to mom. Small classroom, just five or six children in the classroom, all trying to master this technology to begin their day. She booted up, the special education teacher booted up Einat's computer, went on to the next child to boot up her computer and get the class started. 30 seconds later, she heard a voice prompt come from Einat's computer that she had never heard before. "I want to go to the mall." Now again, Einat had never really made any progress. She had chosen between some of the symbols on the screen, chosen yes or no, chosen, had been able to choose between a few items on the screen, but never really advancing, not really showing that she was understanding what was going on in this system. How could it be that she made such a leap? And you can assume that, you know, it's technology, there are glitches. So that is what the teacher thought it was, a glitch in the technology. She walked over, she rebooted Einat's computer and went on to the next little boy to boot up his computer. 30 seconds later, Einat's computer reboots, and once again, she hears a voice prompt come from Einat's computer. "I want to go to the mall." Well, once could be a glitch. Twice, not so much. So she walks over to Einat's computer. She takes a look, and she sees that, in fact, Einat had navigated away from that first screen that she was always working on to an entirely different screen that gave her full rein to choose whatever items she wants, to put it together as a full sentence, and then to hit the button for voice prompt. She wanted to be heard. It was very intentional. Burst of potential. Unbelievable. All right, let's see this through to the end. Special education teacher said, "Okay, Einat, who do you want to go to the mall with?" And Einat got very excited. She navigated to an entirely different screen. And on this screen, there were pictures of all the important people in her life. The doctors and nurses who came to give medication and to check in on them, the national service volunteers who would help in the classroom, the special educators, the other kids in the classroom, her parents, her siblings, essentially anyone who she might want to talk to or about. She chose with her eyes her mom and her six siblings, all one at a time. Second burst of potential. Wow, okay, have to see this through to the end. Special education teacher called up mom at work. "I'm so sorry to bother you. I know that you just dropped Einat off at school, but I have a question. Is it possible that Einat wants to go to the mall with you and her six siblings?" And there was silence on the other end of the line. And then mom burst into tears. "You'd never believe it, but just yesterday, we went to the mall. Me, Einat, and her six siblings. And we got ice cream, and we got treats for the rest of the week. We got special school supplies. And I know that the rest of my kids enjoyed it because, well, they told me, 'Oh, mom, this ice cream is delicious. Oh, these school supplies are so cool. My friends are going to be so jealous. Oh, these treats are going to be great in my lunch for the rest of the week.' Einat comes with us everywhere. We always include her. She's always there. We just never know if she's there, really there, enjoying it, appreciating it. Now that I know that Einat truly loved what we did and wants to do it again, please let her know that the second that I finish my work, I'm going to go around, collect everyone else, all of her siblings from their schools, come back to Adi, pick her up, and we're going to go back to the mall and do it all over again." And when Einat saw that she could actually ask for something and it would happen, it closed a circuit in her mind, and now she speaks a mile a minute with her eyes. Now, I've told that story, as you can imagine, hundreds of times because it so beautifully illustrates the magic that happens at Adi. But there's actually a little addendum to the story, and that is as follows. Last winter, we had a beautiful couple who came to do a ceremony after making a large donation at Adi Negev. They came to the village, and I had told them the story before. We had a nice day planned for them, but the second they got out of the cab, I welcomed them. They said, "Ellie, I know that you have a lot of beautiful things planned for us, but the first thing we need to do is see Einat." A lot of people are touched by this story to the extent that they want to meet her. They want to meet Einat. So I said, "Of course, we'll put everything else on hold. Let's go to the special education school. Let's visit with Einat." So we went to the special education school, and there we saw Einat but we're not, we were immediately approached by the special education teacher who said, "I'm sorry, you can't bother Einat right now." Didn't know what had happened. I didn't know why we couldn't just approach her and start talking. She said, "Well, she's in the middle of a very delicate process." What's that delicate process? Well, now in the age of COVID, where everyone's concerned about health constantly and the spreading of germs, we have this new process where everyone who's had a really takes a, taken a mastery over this AAC technology with the retinal cameras on their computers. Every single morning, everyone goes around the room and everyone with their own eyes and their own computers says Boker Tov, good morning, to every single other person in the classroom. And this morning, when it was Einat's turn, she went around the room saying good morning to everyone, and she noticed that two of her classmates were missing. And again, in the age of COVID, she was afraid that something horrible had happened to them. I explained to them, said the special educator, nothing was wrong. Their moms just decided to keep them home today. Everything will be okay. You'll see them tomorrow. But I miss them, said Einat. So tell them, I told Einat. So you can't talk to Einat right now because she is busy sending these two young women emails with her eyes saying, we missed you in class today. We'll see you tomorrow. There's no such thing as a child who doesn't have potential. And at Adi, we are the family who always has the resources to make sure that every single child's potential is always drawn out to the best of their capability.
Wow, definitely a moving story, and shows a little bit, just a sliver of what Adi is all about. I'm curious, for some of the listeners, they heard you mention Camp Hask. Maybe they've heard a little bit about Adi. Maybe they've seen in the news that, the state of Israel chose to establish a rehabilitation hospital with Adi in the Adi Negev. I'm curious if you could briefly describe to the listeners what makes it so unique and so special, other than just the stories. But I know I've been there once before. The methods of therapy and the amount of staff and everything that I guess in another way to phrase it, it's clear from the website that in addition to government grants in Israel, Adi fundraises on its own because there's so much that happens. If you could give us a little bit of a glimpse into that.
Sure, 100%. So again, Adi is dealing with a population that was otherwise pushed into the shadows. It took some time, but we really have government buy-in. And the government is constantly partnering with us to make sure that we have what we need to move forward, but it's to an extent. Even though the government does give us about 80% of our funding, that does leave that 20% that we need to fundraise, which is millions of dollars every single year. Our philosophy, our mode of operating is that we believe that we need to provide every single resource under the sun to draw out this greatest potential. We believe again that children are like snowflakes, no two are alike, and especially dealing with children with disabilities to draw out that greatest potential, to spark that interest in each child and make sure they reach that greatest potential. It takes every single possible resource. So we do everything from the basics, physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy. We do music and art therapies. We have sports therapy. We have animal therapies. We have hydrotherapy, which is magical stuff. We have hydrotherapy pools in both centers in Jerusalem and in the Negev. And children who are told that they would never, ever walk after following physical therapy, and hydrotherapy together with specialized walkers. You see them pounding the pavement. We just had the Jerusalem Marathon, where every single year we have about 40 members of our Adi family from Adi Jerusalem, young men and women who were wheelchair users who were told they would never ever walk, pounding the pavement at the 800 meter communities track. We to make this happen. The only way this does happen is with partners, as a partnership. We have amazing partners in the government. We have amazing partners at Jewish National Fund USA, many federations around across North America and around the world, families and family foundations who have believed in us for decades already to make everything work. But I think what has happened here in Israel, the reality of disability is looming following October 7th. I think everyone understood that disability is a reality. But again, the same way when I was holding my first child in the hospital and I realized the bullet that I had dodged by having a healthy child, I think the realities that have set in post October 7th have made it so that all of Israeli society is really understanding the benefits of what we offer. In addition to caring for children, teenagers, and adults with severe disabilities, we do offer rehabilitative care for people from all walks of life, all levels of ability, neurotypical people who are just touched by disability for a moment. At Adi Negev, we have the Cayley Rehabilitation Medical Center, the Harvey and Gloria Cayley Rehabilitation Medical Center. It is the first and only rehabilitation hospital in Israel South. And this hospital solved an issue that really was prevalent for a very, very long time, which is that in Israel, the Negev is 60% of the land of Israel, and only 13% of the population lives there. Now, first of all, it can't stay that way. We need to make sure that we're moving hundreds of thousands of people down to the Negev and up north as well, because we can't keep building on the old bones of Jerusalem and Tel Aviv and Herzliya and Bnei Brak. These are older cities that are starting to decay economically, socially. It just won't work if we don't spread out. But beyond that, the current situation is that all of the people who do live in the Negev are woefully underserved. They don't have the resources that they need. And for decades now, you've had a situation where people who are living in the South, anytime they have an accident, you have people, again, neurotypical people touched by disability, a heart attack, stroke, car accident, a victim of terror, someone who is an IDF soldier who was hurt during wartime or during training. Very often they can go to local hospitals in the Negev, someplace like Soroka that can take care of them. And often the trauma is so severe, they need to go center and north to hospitals in Jerusalem, Tel Aviv, Herzliya, Haifa. And when they're there, they would have to stay there for the entirety of their rehabilitation process. And again, the rehabilitation process is, first, we have to save your life, right? Emergency medicine. Following emergency medicine, you have inpatient care. Let's help you walk again, talk again, use your arms again. And once you've mastered that, there is the long haul of outpatient rehabilitation, making sure that we can get you to the point where you are back up on your feet, quite literally, back to life as you remembered it. But that's a long haul. That is not a week-long process. That is months, if not years. And it's so crucial that we are giving all the resources that are necessary. So at Adi Negev Nachalat Aran, which is a 40-acre rehabilitative campus, we have all of the same resources that are used for our residents and our special education students, our hydrotherapy pool, our therapeutic petting zoo and therapeutic horse stable, music therapy, art therapy, OT, PT, all the different things that are already baked into the village. We also have the opportunity to use them for people who are, again, neurotypical and touched by disability. So we're able to give tens of thousands. We have upwards of 50,000 outpatient treatments every single year at Adi Negev to shorten the process, to bring people back from the center and north closer to their families if they're living in the Negev. So at the Cayley Rehabilitation Medical Center, we're solving that rehabilitation crisis in the Negev. And even with our 72 beds that we currently have in the Negev, there are really only 922 beds for 9.7 million people in Israel. Whenever I used to give tours prior to October 7th, kind of used to tongue-in-cheek say, this will hold as long as the entire country doesn't need rehabilitation all at the same time. Unfortunately, al tiftach pe la satan, you're really not supposed to say that kind of thing, because now that's exactly the problem. 9.7 million people are going to need post-trauma treatment, but the physical ailments, all of those people who are in pain, they're going to need to be taken care of right away. The numbers are as follows from October 7th. Since October 7th, there are 20,000 plus people who are war wounded. Of those 20,000 plus people, there are 2,000 who are living with disability for life. That means that on October 6th, totally neurotypical, disability wasn't even on the radar. But as of October 8th, the prognosis they were given is they were going to be living with disability for life. And of those 2,000 people, 500 plus are brand new amputees. The reality of disability looms large in Israel, and it is crucial that we provide every single person who needs to be healed with the resources that they need. And again, there were so many communities in the Negev that were the hardest hit, and everyone wants to come back home. There are so many soldiers and civilians that are in hospitals in the center and north of Israel, and they want to come back home. The Keli Rehabilitation Medical Center at Adi Negev Nachalat Aran is the only rehabilitation hospital in Israel South. So these beds are crucial. The resources that we offer are crucial. And it is so important that we continue to strengthen the staff and the resources, everything that we have there, to make sure that people can just come home. And ultimately, that's what everybody wants. Everybody wants to just go home, live in peace, and to be able to be healed mind, body, and soul. To that extent, we are enhancing our programming for inpatient and outpatient care at the village at Adi Negev. And we're trying to the best of our abilities as well to add on additional resources for post-trauma treatments for people of all ages, to make sure that utilizing all the amazing resources that are baked into our amazing rehabilitation village, people who are coming home back to the South can look to Adi Negev for all the resources that they need.
Okay, wow. Thank you for letting us in a little bit on what's happened since October 7th and how Adi is adapting. Before the last question, I'll just mention again that you mentioned the website before. I'll put the link in the episode description if people want to read more about what goes on a day-to-day basis, recent news articles, or to make a donation or reach out. The last question for every episode is the same, regardless of the guest, which is, you know, especially as a PR person and a tour giver and everything else, you wear all the hats, you constantly field questions about Adi, about yourself. There's been a write-up on you from the Daily Giving website, a previous episode, and other places. But there's always questions people are never asked that they wish they were. So looking back at all the questions you've been asked about Adi, about yourself, about your move from the more public PR to a centralized PR in America to Israel and everything else, what's a question you've never been asked that you wished you were, and what answer would you give to it?
That's a great question, actually. Believe it or not, the best question, and I've never really been asked it directly, is why I do what I do. I kind of a little bit touched on it, and you know, the ways that different things in my life kind of fell into place to be doing this job. But why I do what I do, in a different way, my children and other people have asked me from a different direction. They always ask me, you know, Abba, when you go and you give tours at Adi Negev or Adi Jerusalem, and you're doing tour after tour after tour, or you're going and you're doing fundraising and you're giving speech after presentation, doesn't it get boring? And the answer to the two questions are the same. Why do I do what I do? Does it get boring? It never gets boring. And I do this because I know, having been able to have the privilege of speak about Adi and the magic that Adi holds and gives over to individuals and families and communities, I know these stories. But when I give over these stories, you take people who come off of a tour bus and come into our Adi centers and have really no idea why they're there. And then I tell these stories and I show them the different things that we do and the magic that exists at Adi. And all of a sudden you see something click. You see that sparkle in their eye, that understanding of, oh, wow, this place is special. This place really is really is magical. And then that's why I do what I do, for exactly those reasons. Working with partners like Daily Giving, who you mentioned, like Jewish National Fund, like so many others around the world, gives me an opportunity to speak with so many different kinds of people from all different backgrounds and all different walks of life. And every single time, again, it's exactly the same. They start off not understanding who I am, why I do what I do, but immediately as I start to talk and they start to understand what it is that I do and what we do as a family at Adi, everything falls into place. And when I get that that click. I see that sparkle in their eyes, and I understand that I have given a little piece of my soul, and I have given over a little bit of the ID magic. That makes why I do what I do so special.
Oh, wow. Thank you for that answer and all the answers and the overview to both your story and the part of the ID story. I'm sure the listeners realize that there's so much more that we didn't even get to scrape the surface of. I'm curious, before we go, if there's anything else you want to mention.
So I'll simply just say this very, very quickly, and it's a much longer story, as you mentioned. I will say that every single Israeli has incredible, miraculous stories from October 7th. I will just simply say that, as I mentioned, Adi Negev Nachalat Iran is 12 miles from the Gaza border. On October 7th, even though we were very much in the path of destruction, we were spared. Our gates were open. We were unarmed. Again, the most peaceful people, the most vulnerable members in Israeli society. On Route 241, the terrorists passed us right by and went over to Ofakim, just a kilometer up the road, where they murdered 50 people and they wounded thousands more. And I've told the full story as how everything transpired on the morning of October 7th. And the question that people ask there is why? Why was Adi spared? I hope that during this short interview, I gave everyone, all of your listeners, a glimpse into Adi and the understanding. What we do at Adi is God's work. The reason that we were skipped over on October 7th is very, very clear to us. It was divine intervention. The light of humanity that shines from Adi is the kind of light that needs to continue shining. And if people have not heard about Adi, this is their very first time, if they want to learn more, I do urge them to understand what we do, to contribute, to be partners, to be a part of our family, to go to adi-israel.org, adi-israel.org, and to understand the light of humanity that shines at Adi and why we were passed over on October 7th and how they can help us continue to shine that light of humanity for years to come.
Thank you for listening to this past episode of the Jewish Schmooze podcast. To get our latest updates and contact us, you can follow us on Twitter at Jews_Schmooze. If you want to sponsor an upcoming episode, you can reach out to JewsSchmoozeMarketing@gmail.com. And if you give us a 5-star rating on whatever platform you're listening on, that'll be tremendously appreciated. Thank you so much, and hope you're looking forward to the next episode also.